Tonight we welcome Susan St. Thomas, speaking about navigating 2008 using astrology. We like to start every year with a talk in our Thursday series on astrology to get the year going, and this is that event. Susan has not, I believe, spoken at the store before, so this is her first time. She is a fine artist and displays, I believe, down at the Sebastopol Gallery, just down the street here.
Partner there.
Beautiful new gallery. And if I'm not mistaken, also does counseling, perhaps in that space or other spaces. I'm not quite clear about that, but she'll tell us, I'm sure, about those possibilities. But we're very grateful that you could come tonight, and so welcome, and the floor is yours.
Thank you.
You're also a Sophie, are you not?
Yes, but I'm incognito.
Okay.
Yes. I do turn in harmony with the planets in many ways. Well, I committed to this subject tonight because it's really different for me. I started studying astrology in the 60s, nobody's counting, and then I went into a practice that just kind of happened in the early 70s, and so I've specialized in natal astrology, which is geared for the individual, studying birth charts. Mm-hmm. But of course we're also a part of a bigger picture here, the history of civilization, which includes past, present, and future. And I can't talk about that all in an hour, can I? So I've put together a few notes so that I can give you some tidbits, at least. How many of you are absolute novices where it comes to astrology? Anybody? Okay, like about four. How many of you actually do read charts for other people now? A few. Okay, so we've got a range here. Astrology means study of the stars, but really we're studying the planets, not the stars. So it really should be planetology, but nobody says that. Astrology is nothing more than the study of the correlation between planetary cycles and life on Earth. It's a poetic language that has a scientific foundation. So as a language, it can be used in many, many ways. And I've chosen to specialize in working with the individual because I figure that's where we have the most opportunity to make an impact. It's with one person at a time. And I'm still learning after all these years. So I pulled out lots of old notes because I've saved things. And there were a lot of juicy tidbits that I'd forgotten about in terms of the bigger picture. But I do want to give you just a little background, because I find that the history of astrology up to modern times is fascinating. It's an ancient religion of the stars, in the sense that people were worshipping the lights, the sun and the moon, because they were the givers of life. And they marked the seasons and the cycles of growth, and so that's how it was a religion, with rituals and let's say a way of integrating personal life, tribal life, with those cycles. Astrology flourished in all the ancient cultures, China, Persia, Greece, Egypt, practiced by the Babylonians, the Sumerians, the Celts. So we're going back thousands of years, but it has survived, hasn't it? So there must be something to it. Those of you who are deeply into it know there's something to it. But the system that we use today is very, very different. Number one, we have modern technology. We have telescopes, we have computers. The ancients were relying on visual sightings. So the planets were called the wanderers. They were the stars that moved. So modern scientists still are attacking astrology after all these years, but the odd thing is that aspects of modern science actually developed out of astrology. As recent as 300 years ago, many astronomers, the guys we got to do our chart work for us, knew a great deal about astrology. 400 years ago, many astronomers practiced astrology, and 500 years ago, astronomers all were more or less astrologers. So what happened? I won't go there, but you can probably figure it out. We can go back to Copernicus. I won't spend a lot of time there. He was born in 1473 and died in 1543. He was a classic Renaissance man who really was fed up with the charts he had to use because the planets weren't where they were supposed to be when he's trying to cast horoscopes. So he built telescopes and actually figured out that the planets were going around the sun. Now this is, 1500. Before that, who knows? The systems were pretty archaic. And then other astronomers came along and refined the sightings and got better tables. And dear Galileo, who we learned about in school, was a real scientist. And he played with the system that Copernicus came up with and did lots of experiments, but the church threatened to torture him unless he abandoned the crazy idea that the planets went around the sun. Marsilio Ficino, one of my personal favorites, he was born in 1433 to 1499. High Renaissance. He was a Florentine Renaissance man who was a priest, a magician, an astrologer. Did I say physician? Musician. All of these things. And he had a very progressive way of looking at astrology because for him, the planets represented aspects of the soul. They were archetypes. So he was way ahead in that department. And his work influenced Thomas More and James Hillman. So there's a book you might be interested in if you haven't seen it. It's Thomas More's The Planets Within. Because astrology was not so much a predictive science for him. It was a way of unifying life and seeing how everything was working together. And he definitely combined medicine and astrology, which has been separated in so many cultures. And that all paved the way for Carl Jung, who came along and started setting up charts for individuals in 1911. And then never stopped and continued that until he died. But not everyone knows that either, because his history has been sanitized like Galileo's. But this is not very long ago. This is only a few hundred years ago. Astrology's been here for thousands. So modern astrology is kind of still climbing out of the dark ages. It really is. Many people still think of it, probably nobody here, but they think of it as your daily horoscope in the newspaper or the magazine. But horoscope means our view. A horoscope really is the picture of the sky at the moment you were born, the minute, the day, the place, everything. So that's the foundation for individual natal astrology. But you can chart anything. Anything has a beginning. Like this lecture. You could set a chart for the moment we started, this place now, and it would give you a picture of the essence of that event. But planets don't make people do anything. You're not being pulled around by some gravitational attraction. Astrology represents the unfoldment of a process. It's a guide. Your individual life map, your horoscope, is just a guide. And as a map, it's not the journey, it's only giving you information about what might happen this way, that way. It's a guide. So So in terms of predictions, even though I'm talking about that tonight, I think that we are gifted with divine creative free will to do whatever we're going to do. But within each of us, there's some kind of force to fulfill a purpose or a destiny. Anybody not believe that? That it's all chance? I don't see any hands. Or you wouldn't be here. So astrology is a system that helps us to identify an underlying purpose or meaning for our lives. Remember, prediction and predicaments come from the same root word. And as Carolyn Casey reminded us, predicament is usually something very unpleasant. Prophecy suggests a co-creation with the divine, where we have information, but we also have free will to choose. Is that enough background? Mm-hmm. I could really go on and on there, but I won't. We're looking at the cycles of 2008, but we have to look at a bigger picture because what's happening now has got roots in the past and will carry through way beyond this year. So I can't break down 2008 into month-by-month predictions, even though some people ask for them. It can't be done. You have to step back and look at the bigger picture, and then you can come in closer and look at some very practical kinds of information that can help you make your daily plans. So I prefer to step back and look at the bigger picture first, and then we'll end with some of the monthly things that you might want to note. The outer planets, the ones beyond Saturn, mean this is beyond the visible, the transpersonal. So I believe that the cycles that we measure by following the outer planets are marking more the collective trends, the currents of nations, cultures, of our history and our future. So we want to place ourselves in that bigger picture because we're all instruments in this process, and we can do so much from right where we are once we get a sense of the currents. You can jump in, or you can observe it. You can put a little toe in, but you still want to know where the currents are running, right? So is it difficult for anyone to understand how planets represent energies? But that's what they are. They represent either archetypal energies or life forces. They are living within us. And they connect us in ways. And so these three outer planets are really important in terms of that bigger picture. Uranus is right now transiting through the sign of Pisces. And it entered this sign in 2003. It will be there until 2011. The signs are descriptive qualities. People are not signs. They just color the energy. They describe how something works. So I would never say, "What's your sign?" Believe me. I might ask you what your birthday is. But I'll never ask you your sign, because if we look at the whole sky, we're looking at the whole of life, and all 12 signs represent the completeness of life. But as each of these outer planets moves through one of these signs, it's telling you about a current, a movement, a process, a life process of which we are all a part. Okay, Uranus and Pisces. Uranus itself represents the principle of awakening. The kind you get if you were to put your finger in an electrical outlet. It's kind of a zap. Or maybe you get totally fried. But it's an energy that is shocking, but definitely shakes you up, wakes you up to something bigger, something better, something different, something experimental. So if we follow the sign through one of these cycles, the transit of Uranus through a sign, then we get a sense of what is waking up in our culture. And maybe you want to participate in that process. Pisces itself is a sign of spirituality, beliefs, and the religious institutions to some extent, but more the belief or the philosophy behind it. Pisces is a water sign. So it wakes us up at a level that we can't quite explain or identify. So if you just take those elements and put them together, imagine what that would be doing, what's possible, what the potentials are there. Awakenings, rebellions, amazing events, disruptions. Uranus is associated with life quakes and earthquakes. So how do you have an earthquake in the water? What's been happening?
Tsunami.
Hurricanes, water doing funny things on the planet, shifting, and changing people's lives drastically in the process. So it's not just water, it's also our belief system. So hopefully you're also going, well, do I really believe that? Maybe not. What if I changed my belief system about this? My goodness, what that would do to my life, the way I relate to other people. Let's see, what else is Pisces? The last time it went through Pisces, there was a big lineup. People thought the world was going to come to an end. There was going to be a big flood and it would be the end of the world. But instead, we had the Reformation. The church changed. Everybody changed the way they really saw the world from the inside out. So that's one of the best things you could do, is just change the way you believe about yourself and about life and about the rules that you've been following. Maybe they're not so true after all. Okay, that's over in a few years, but we're still in the midst of it. Right now we've got Neptune transiting Aquarius. That started in 1998, yes, and it's going to 2012. I look over here, it's books, 2012. 2012, I wonder what that means. And then it'll go into Pisces. But Neptune was only discovered in 1846. So we haven't been aware of that principle for long. So basically, it was discovered in the sign of Aquarius, meaning it's returned to its place of discovery. It is. The last transit through Aquarius was 1834 to 1848. And if you want to go back and do some historical research, you'll probably find that this was an amazing time in terms of awakening spirituality. In fact, spiritualism was a big thing in those days. You see the movie The Illusionist and what was the other one?
About Prestige.
Prestige. I believe they were set in this time because Mesmer was a scientist, a doctor at that time, and he was getting into the field of transpersonal work, metaphysics. But magic and spiritualism was big. So we're at the next higher level of that. we already know about spiritualism and spirits and mediums, and at least we know something. I started studying in a spiritualist church in 1967 because it was fascinating. The phenomena was fascinating. This was real stuff that I'd read about. So I wanted to know what it was about. Oh, okay. So tables tip, so people go into trance, and, you know, that happens. But that's what this is about, but on the next higher level. So maybe we have mediums walking around here, and they are doing things that are at a higher level, but still channeling. I don't know what you would call it. Inspired teachings, inspired music and art. So Neptune in itself represents collective dreams, visions, enchantment, magic, and the mythology of our times. So if we were looking at Neptune in our birth charts, we would be looking at the place where we are looking for magic, where we seek to be inspired, where we have a higher vision for life. But this is what we are doing collectively right now through until 2012. We have the opportunity to create a new mythology about ourselves and our fellow human beings. Neptune also has a way of loosening and dissolving boundaries. This is a big one. And Aquarius is associated with groups, teams, political and social organizations, movements. So what do you imagine is happening here? If we're melting down the boundaries of social political groups, there's not such a definition then between a Republican and a Democrat and a what other categories you want to name.
The systems are starting to fall, such as medicine, law, education.
Yeah, the definition between the different movements is not so clear anymore, which
I'm
includes the one between science and religion. I went to sat in on a noetic science talk group. I was really impressed with what these people are doing. Talking about quantum physics. I didn't even know what that was. I hate to admit that, but now I know. It's the all that's beyond the visible, but on the microscopic version. Just like the outer planets are associated with what we can't see in the sky. So here we have these two extremes that are talking about the same thing. So if there are not such strong boundaries between cultures, then we have more of a blending of humanity. And one of the predictions that I've been reading about here and there is that over the next few years, we're probably going to see more immigrants coming from different countries, people moving across the planet from one area to another where they'd formerly been isolated. Refugees, immigrants, there must be another word for that. Just a blending of cultures. How about that? What's that going to require of us? Racism. We've got to give up racism. And that was one of the subjects at the table for this noetic science group. What can they do to eliminate racism? Because if we're going to see cultures blending, if people from one part of the planet are moving to another, we got to get along with each other. We got to understand one another. So that's something we can do right now.
To build bridges rather than walls.
Hmm?
To build bridges rather than walls.
Yes. Yes. Good idea. Good image. So we'll probably see more ideals of brotherhood, sisterhood, groups being formed to further higher consciousness, just as they did back in the last Neptune in Aquarius cycle between 1834 and 1848. There was a great movement towards freedom, eliminating slavery, That was just one of many movements that are identified with that period. But there's still a need for greater freedom, isn't there? There's a lot of people that are still enslaved in some way. Oh, filmmaking came in that period too. And Morse code, people could then magically talk to other people along that little wire. So what's our new form of connection? Cell phones and internet. But in those days, the telegraph was revolutionary. It seems funny now, doesn't it? And also during that time, Eastern religions, Hinduism and Buddhism, were imported into Western thought, laying the way for many other blendings of belief systems and cultures. Okay. How are we doing here? Pluto. We are on the brink of Pluto changing signs. It's tomorrow.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy mackerel, that doesn't happen very
often. No. Pluto is the outermost planet, so it has the greatest impact in terms of transformation on the planet. And it can identify generations because it stays in one sign from 15 to 20 years. 15 to 20 years. So you'll have that in your birth chart in common with everybody about your age, unless you happen to be born right at the cusp. So our new babies coming into the world after tomorrow are going to be a different generation with a different common spiritual destiny that they will share. But we're all in it together.
What sign are we going into?
Pluto is going into Capricorn, an earth sign. It is leaving the sign of Sagittarius, which is a fire sign. So we can look back now to the last 15 years and see what it's done in terms of global communications. Big one. We can now talk to people anywhere on the planet, practically. It has transformed law, science, religion, higher education, the publishing business. And, of course, bookstores are feeling that. Anybody can publish their own book, good or bad, but you can get it out there. So Sagittarius is very international in feeling. The planet has been opened up and is available to all. That's not going to stop, but we're shifting to the next level here. Pluto will only touch into Capricorn tomorrow through June, mid-June. And then it retrogrades back out again because the Earth is going to pass it by. And then returns to Capricorn late in November, the 27th, and stays in that Earth sign until 2024. So we're all speculating now as to what this is going to bring. It's only speculation. We have no idea. Or maybe we do. Capricorn is an earth sign. So right off the top, Al Gore has told us there's going to be earth changes, and I'm sure there will be. We're already seeing them. Pluto represents, yes, transformations, but through upheavals. And often there's the need for rebuilding, especially in Capricorn, which is a sign of building, bridges in particular. It's a sign of the creative life force, Shiva, death and rebirth. So it's big. It can be very, very positive, too. A lot of the predictions I've read are kind of negative. Hard, yes, but, you know, we will survive. Life will go on. What's going to be affected will be the the elements that are associated with this sign Capricorn, and that's primarily security-based systems, the administration, the government, the laws, the established church, the established way of doing anything, conservative thinking. Yes, out with conservative thinking, in with something new. It's not comfortable though, is it? Just to think about that, our security-based systems. Well, I have to say is, if you place your sense of security outside yourself, you're going to be very insecure. But if it's internal, you're set. This will be a piece of cake. So I think that we're going to have to rethink security in general. Is it your property? Is it your bank account? Is it your stock portfolio?
Your refrigerator.
Your refrigerator. Oh, we've had to do without that this month, haven't we? And we got along just fine. Well, it wasn't comfortable, but we did it. I started fantasizing about Pluto and Capricorn. Okay, what's wondrous about the Earth? It holds mysteries, resources. So of course we're going to be looking for other types of resources to use. We have to. Can't keep using oil. But maybe there's something down there we haven't even tapped into yet. Maybe there's other minerals. There's other resources within the Earth herself. Gifts from nature. Let's go dig them out. Let's see what's there. Or maybe they'll just be revealed. Like, well, a little earthquake here and a little shift over there. Voila! Look what the Earth has provided for us. Something wondrous. But you know, there's something very wondrous happening already. I know you're going to laugh when I say this. Crop circles. I am fascinated. They've been around a long time. And we all went, those two guys with a board. Those are not created with two 60-year-old men with a board and a string. I suggest you look into it. It's one of the last mysteries of the Earth right now that's right in front of our nose. Where does this come from? How are these made? In seconds. Do you have anything here in the bookstore on crop circles?
I think we do, but I'd have to look for the exact.
Oh. Well, I'm saving that for one of my Scorpio sidelines. I don't care what people think. I'm fascinated. What incredible intelligence is trying to communicate with us through our own Earth without being destructive.
They're so beautiful.
They're beautiful. And nothing's getting hurt. In fact, the crops are being enhanced. They grow better after they've been bent, woven back together, reformed. Better. Are we getting the message? I hope we do. I sure hope we do. So can you think of any others? Maybe a continent rising here or something coming up over there, or the Earth spitting out another ancient being, or who knows what we're going to find in there, but something. And then what we do with it is up to us. But the Earth sciences would certainly be a good field to study, wouldn't it? Earth sciences. There's probably going to be a whole nother category in higher education necessary.
Combination of sciences, will recombine. As you were saying before, the cultures become so separated. Recombining.
Mm-hmm. We've already broken down the boundaries between the different categories.
Yeah.
Earth sciences. Ecology is as close as we come right now.
What is like biophysics?
There must be other scientific minds here. Who knows?
I'm just kind of curious with Capricorn representing sort of the
the ascent to the top of the mountain, that maybe there's a way that that energy will bring in new vision and new order.
A new order for sure. Mm-hmm. Necessary. Yes. Many old systems will need to be completely overhauled.
Yay.
Because we're getting bogged down in some of the old ones. So what can you do to contribute to that? This is a question you get to ask yourself, and you got lots of time to work on it, as this goes until 2024. And it's just starting. So I'm sure there's plenty of people, plenty of visionaries who are ahead of the game, and they're working on it now. Just like, how do we deal with this shifting water system on our planet? How are we going to deal with that? We're going to have to build homes in a different way, cities in a different way, don't you imagine? Certainly bridges in a different way. So the building industry is going to be a target one. I have a little note here that when I was in studying financial astrology, which got really boring really fast, I remember being told that every time Pluto changes direction, the price of gold changes. So if it was going down, it comes up. If it's going up, it turns and goes back down. So that may impact your life or not, but that's something I remember from that. How does the price of gold affect your life? Probably the price of oil is more important than the price of gold. Huh? So just for notes, Pluto will turn retrograde on April 2nd, and then it'll turn direct again on September 9th this year. The outer planets all go retrograde for long periods of time, which means the Earth is passing them by, and they appear to be going backwards. Of course, they're not changing direction in their orbit around the sun. They just appear to, like when you're driving a car and you're passing a train that's going the same direction. It just appears that they're going backwards because you're going faster. So it's that phenomenon. But anything that's retrograde or comes to a standstill means something is going to come to a standstill, and it's kind of burning a hole. It's in your face. You got to deal with it, and then you shift gears. So these are shifting gears times in terms of this Pluto process. Does that make sense?
April through November?
No. Yes, that's when it's retrograde.
September.
I thought it was June.
It turns retrograde April 2nd and then direct September 9th.
Is going into Sagittarius for that period?
Yes.
Pluto only stays in Capricorn between the end of this month until mid-June. And so it backs into Sagittarius again and then returns to stay at the end of November. So some people are saying that Pluto doesn't really enter Capricorn until 2009. But no, it's sticking its little toe in, at least, so that we have a clue as to what this is going to bring and maybe what we're going to do with it. Any questions about these outer planets? Kind of hard to see a cycle that's 15 years long. But by going back into history, you can get a sense of what happened before. And it's always at a higher level. So if you're interested in things like that, this is a book that I hope is still in print or available. Horoscope for the New Millennium by E. Allen Meese. It's a life work. And he's traced the history of civilization as far back as there is record and plotted the cycles of the outer planets. Thank you. like this. When the outer planets join in the sky, forming a conjunction or an opposition, there's a big turn in civilization. And he marks these as a golden age. There's been many golden ages when science, religion, the arts, literature, music came to a high level of development with extraordinary talents emerging. And then it kind of slips down and we forgot how important all those things were, and then it comes back up again. So if you just look at this, you get a sense of how it works globally. We live in a small world. Most of us don't travel the world. We don't see how people in China live or in South America or anywhere else. But he's coordinated, integrated the cycles of all the cultures in terms of these outer planet transits. And that's what this whole book is about, going up to 2050 with specific predictions. Whether you believe them or not, remember it's a predicament to believe this stuff. But I just pulled it out a few days ago and read the section about 2006 and 2007, because this book was published in 1997. So he was just putting out possible predictions. And they were right. Most of them. He got Iran and Iraq mixed up, but other than that, pretty much the way it was has unfolded for us. But keep in mind, you can always change things. But it's not completely negative at all. It's very positive. So we'll see if we can get that.
It is still in print.
Ah, good. Good. When I was a kid, I either wanted to be an artist, a veterinarian, or an archaeologist. And I gave up the veterinarian when too much blood. Definitely became an artist. That's the other half of my life. But I did become an archaeoastronomer. That's a term that I think I read about in that book. People who are following the history of the world using astrology. An archaeoastronomer. And now we have computers to do all this. It's amazing. Longhand, yes. Yes, we did everything with logarithm tables and such. But there's ways to just turn the computers back to the time when the pyramids were built. And you could see what planets were where and what stars were lined up with what. That's why they built them that way. Or part of the reason. So that's just another way of using astrology to study history. But you're making your own right now, aren't you? You're making your own history right now. And we can use astrology in a very simplified way by following the inner planets. That's noting the Sun, the Moon, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. Jupiter and Saturn are kind of in the middle between the outer planets and the inner planets. So they're the checks and balance system of the zodiac. They're big guys, and they sit there and indicate where we want to grow and where we want to contract or consolidate. So that's why we think of them as checks and balances. But the inner planets are ones that we can mark, measure, note. And these cycles help us with our daily plans, so that we launch our boat when the tide's in instead of out, so that we have as much in our favor as possible when it's time to begin an important new project. I do hope that there are astrology calendars here. Imagine there are. Yes? Because some of this you can
we're running low at this point.
Oh, running low.
Because it's late in January. But we do have a few left.
Okay.
What are the two middle planets? Saturn and what else?
Jupiter and Saturn.
Jupiter, yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then there's an asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. Well, fragments floating around, and some people like to plot those too. But you may or may not want to use the asteroids. Okay, let's see here. Why don't we start with what's coming here? February 6th. What is that? Yes. And it's the year of the
rat.
Yes. Not the mouse. The rat. Mouse is way too meek and cute. The rat is clever. Ah, they're smart. I had a pet rat when I was a kid. I respect rats. And then there's Ratatouille, you know. Just in time for the year of the rat. I don't know much about Chinese astrology, but I do know that, generally speaking, the year of the rat is supposed to be one of prosperity and wealth, especially if you're clever, like that little guy, and you make your move at the right time, and you use what you know. This particular new moon, the beginning of the Chinese New Year, is also an eclipse. Now, we have two solar eclipses each year. Usually one is total, but not always. Any eclipse will do. It has greater impact as a new moon. A new moon is always a beginning. It's the dark of the moon, and in tradition, it was a time for reflection, meditation, a time for setting intentions, planting, maybe just planting your visions for life, for starting something new. When it happens to be a solar eclipse as well, then it's a super new moon, and it usually means that whatever's building up in the 2 weeks before that has greater impact and it lasts longer. So if you feel caught up in a big force in your life that's hard to ignore, that can be a little overwhelming, it's just preparation. It may be a part of a clearing process. Because the old wives' tale is that, oh, somebody dies at an eclipse. Mm-mm. Something is eclipsed out. Yes, what a great opportunity to let go of, throw away, resolve, put it aside. Yeah, let the shadow be thrown over what you don't want to do anymore or what's not working in your life. And that's where we are right now. So in preparation for this coming new moon and this Chinese New Year, you can continue with your clearing process. And maybe it's being cleared for you. Things sometimes just fall apart. They're supposed to. Don't try to hold it together. It's not valuable or important. We're in the dark symbolically at a new moon, which means we don't necessarily know how things are going to turn out, but we still have to keep going, like finding our way in the dark, using our inner radar, our inner guidance, our intuition. So set your intentions on February 6th.
I already scheduled a friend to do visioning on February 6th. Knowing
and you didn't know what day it was? When there's an eclipse, then there's activation times during the year where there may be stages of development based on what you started. And one of those would include the transit of the sun as it comes around every 12 weeks and activates that eclipse point. So unless you're following it, like making a note on your calendar, you may not realize that these events are connected. Or maybe you can use these dates to consciously develop your your vision, your projects. So the first square or activation time would be May 7th or thereabouts, give or take a few days. I'm just giving you the exact day. So it may be May 3rd or May 10th. So mark a week of time around May 7th, because that might be the next push or the next crisis or the next stage when you feel it's time to move forward again with what you are seeding on February 6th.
And why is it May 7th? That's sort of
because that's the square,
the square
to it. Every three months, every 12 weeks.
The square of what? No, the sun.
The sun comes around and makes a 90-degree angle to the eclipse point.
Okay. Thank you.
And then it makes 180-degree opposition to that point. Mm. And that it will do August 9th or thereabout. If you are following the news events, you might see that there are stages of development, but I don't read the newspaper much, so I don't follow. I go back into history, and that's more interesting to me somehow. But I'm working with these in personal lives, and this is when it becomes very powerful. But you can follow skirmishes and wars by following activations to eclipse points if you choose. Or you can seed new visions and keep nurturing and watering those, whatever interests you. Now we have another one that's even bigger this year than February 6th. And that one is August 1st. And that's written up in this book. Way back in 1996 or whenever he wrote this, he was talking about the eclipse of August 1st, 2008. So watch the two-week period before August 1st. That means the last half of July, right? Because what's happening at that eclipse, which happens to be a total eclipse, which is more powerful, is that Mars and Uranus are on opposite sides of the Earth. So we have dynamic energy at work that can be a little volatile.
Is that in July?
That's the last part of July, the very first of August.
Okay, so Uranus on one side and Mars on the other.
Mars is opposite Uranus, and it's a total solar eclipse. Scotty, beam me up. I don't know.
In Uranus.
Ready for it.
I'm ready, yeah. Mars is in Virgo. Yes, it is. So there are possible upheavals in store or awakenings. Don't you just want to wake people up sometimes? Well, maybe you don't have to do anything at all. It'll just happen spontaneously. But it's not easy. Sometimes it's just not easy.
Do you know what degree Mars would be in Virgo?
Well, I can look it up right here. Wouldn't go anywhere without my trusty ephemeris. Let's see. August 1st, Mars is 18 degrees. On the 1st, but it soon thereafter exactly opposes Uranus, so the eclipse cycle probably continues until the middle of August, mm-hmm. because that's the range or orb. From the very end of July, the last few days of July, until mid-August. When I think of those two dynamic energies together, I think of doing something wild and crazy and different and innovative and experimental. Earthquakes, you can't do anything about. Lifequakes? Inevitable. And maybe it's time for you to start the lifequake by doing something extraordinary for yourself and for others. That's the way I would look at this. Yes, those two energies together are often associated with emergency situations or the urgency to do something wild and crazy and different. It's all in how you interpret it.
I'm supposed to go to Europe in August. Should I go the latter part of August rather than the first part?
Probably a good idea.
Thanks.
If you have a choice. Unless you want a really exciting trip.
No thanks.
And then Saturn happens to be in opposition to Uranus. Saturn also is in Virgo this year. And it's exact, or very close to be exact, right at election time. Saturn is the conservative element. Uranus is the radical. So it's probably going to be what we would expect, the conservative ideas in contrast to the more progressive ideas for radical change.
So who's going to win the election? When is that going to be?
I keep that prediction.
When is the Saturn opposition to Uranus that's going to
happen? Right around election time. There might be others, but that just happens to be a big time.
That's just like when the opposition is full on, is right about the first week in November.
Well, it's actually quite a bit. November and December and January 2009.
Okay, for 3 months.
Well, and then again in 2009 we go into it again. So it's going to be an ongoing part of our lives. One of the, let's say, any conjunction of major planets is like a seed that's been planted. And we had a wonderful one at the end of last year. In December, Jupiter was conjunct Pluto in Capricorn. Jupiter has entered Capricorn and will be there this year. And Jupiter is like the element of opportunity. When I think of Jupiter and Pluto together, I think of abundant wealth, dynamic, creative energy that's unlimited.
That's when Jupiter's with what?
Jupiter and Pluto were very close together in late Sagittarius in December of last year. Mm-hmm. So it's very possible that you have planted some seeds already, and we've done that collectively, that will be very profitable this year. If indeed it's the year of the rat, and this is going to be a year for prosperity, it's possible that the seeds are already there in each of your lives. And all you have to do is go back to what you were doing there at the end of November and December 2007 and work on that. Just a thought. Okay, we have a couple of other inner planets that are worth noting, because these are trends that are somewhat like the weather. If it's raining, you take an umbrella. Mars is representative of our energy, our drive, action, strength, courage. So it's what we need to push things through, to get out there and make things happen. And it's been retrograde since the middle of November. But it's going direct on, the 30th? No. The 29th? Yeah, the 29th of this month, right around the corner.
Yeah.
So this only takes place every couple years. Mars is in retrograde. And these are good times to clean out your closets, rebuild your fences, because maybe a tree fell on it, like ours did. Restructure some of the work you do, things like that. But it's almost over. It's not necessarily the best time to try to launch a new project. But Mars is energy work. So if you've been feeling a little dormant, you can blame it on the weather. You're supposed to be sleeping longer, right? We're hibernating. But also Mars has been retrograde. Well, that was my excuse for sleeping 10 hours a night, but it's part of our energy. It's just not there to get up and do these big things that we had hoped we would be doing during the winter. So don't be hard on yourself. But as this planet goes direct, then possibly it is time to pick up the hammer and the computer and get things moving. If you've been waiting. However, Mercury's going retrograde.
Okay.
And Mercury rules communications, the thinking process, ideas, not doing action, but ideas and information and all the tools we use to connect with other people and to transmit information. So it's in retrograde about three times every year for about 3 weeks. No big deal. But it can simplify your life a bit to note these dates, because the message is rethink, rewrite, gather information, do your research, edit, but maybe it's not time to self-publish the book. Maybe it's not time to plan your whole year of classes or anything that requires information and organizing and planning.
Can you tell us when those three periods are going to be?
Yes. Mercury is going retrograde on the 28th of this month, just as Mars is coming out of retrograde. So you might want to continue putting off doing those things that you were going to do through those long, dark winter months, and just go ahead and wait till mid-February when it goes direct on the 19th of February.
Okay.
I suggest to people to take a pencil and pencil in the periods when Mercury is retrograde to remind yourself to pencil everything in.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're probably going to need to use your eraser. Changes are almost inevitable. And for good reason. So you don't want to do a big planning if you're going to have to change half of it later, right? Or you can double check important events, like call people and make sure they know when they're supposed to do what, where. Follow up on the details. So it's small potatoes, but it sure can save you a lot of time, energy, and frustration. So that's why an astrological calendar may just give you this kind of practical information. Yeah. The next one is in May 26th until June 19th, if you're writing these down. And the last one of this year is September 24th until October 15th. My husband, Joel.
She's doing good.
I haven't run off at the mouth yet. Too much. Getting stuck in little things. The only other addition I would add to these transits, if you're working with your calendar, is to, of course, circle your new moon and the full moon. Because what you start on the new moon may come into fullness at the full moon. You're standing in the full light of what you have started. Maybe there's information available to you that wasn't before, especially when it's an eclipse. So there's a lunar eclipse that accompanies every solar eclipse. So the eclipse coming on this New Year, Chinese New Year of the 6th, is on the 20th of February. It's a lunar eclipse. It's kind of like raising your garden from the new moon to the full moon and then letting it kind of settle back in. until the next new moon. Just a rhythm to life between the sun, the moon, and the earth. We are using geocentric astrology here. There are other systems. There's sidereal astrology, where calculations are made based on the sun being the center of the chart or the action. So be aware there's different versions. Vedic astrology is sidereal astrology. So this is kind of Western astrology, or using the tropical zodiac. Questions? Other than what's going to happen? Yeah.
I was a little disturbed when you suggested a leaning towards planetology instead of astrology, because I feel like the planets are like representatives of the stars, and the configurations, the different configurations, draw in. I just don't like separating the influences. Like, mm-hmm. I see different configurations as imaging the universe in different ways, and inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
So I like the term astrology a lot.
I do too. It'll never be obsolete. And indeed, we are using the constellations, in a way, the formations of the stars, to represent these signs.
Mm.
So there is a relationship.
Turn to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a question about the year 2008. I've been hearing from different sources that it's a great year for manifestation, that it rhymes with great, and that, you know, numerologically it's great. So what is your take on 2008 astrologically?
Well, that's what this talk was about.
Well,
there's many aspects to it, and it's individual.
Mm-hmm.
I would never say this is a good year for everybody, because some people are not going to have great years.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you mean by great?
Mm-hmm.
And what do you mean by successful?
I don't know. That's why I'm trying to understand why are they making these general statements, and if there's something that I'd like to understand, what's behind that, and to figure out if you're in agreement with that, or if you're kind of have a more discerning view of, for some people it could be a great year, for others not so great.
My work is almost exclusively individual astrological counseling. So I am working with one person at a time. And they are the center of their world, their universe. So even though we are all connected and there are these general trends, interpretations for me are individual.
I guess what I've been hearing is that, in 2006 and 2007, that there was, kind of culturally speaking, a lot of us were working on our belief systems and were working on transformation. And in 2008, we're perhaps clear enough to start manifesting more from that place, and that it should be more smooth manifestation than maybe last year.
I think you're right.
Yeah,
and I think that's why I said go back to the end of last year, uh-huh, when Jupiter and Pluto were conjunct,
uh-huh,
because I think we planted the seeds for what we're manifesting through this year, 2008.
Okay, so
and any seeding conjunction like that will have activations.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to go back, follow the transits, which you can do, and look for Mars and the Sun aspecting late Sagittarius, those might be times when you are truly seeing growth in your late 2007 project.
Okay.
Thank you. There's always something. Because in 2006, we had the fixed Grand Cross that kept, that was pretty intense. And last year, Jupiter was in Sagittarius all year, which I thought it was a breather, and now... Pluto going into Capricorn is a big event, and I really appreciated, sort of your spaciousness around it and permission to envision what are positive ways this could manifest, because, Capricorn can have a fear element to it, and it has a rigidity to it,
mm-hmm,
that, there's a lot of possibility
Most everything I have read has been negative, which is why I had to go, okay, let's get creative here. What else is Capricorn? All signs are good. There's no bad ones. Mm-hmm. So what's the highest expression of Capricorn? Perhaps some of you can come up with others that I haven't thought of. You're right, it's the goat. Maybe we should all get goats.
But it's a mythical goat.
How about integrity? Yeah.
How about integrity?
I've got one that, you know, it's our U.S. chart, if we look at it as a personality, is going to have our Pluto return in Capricorn. The founding of a country where each person was respected as an individual, or our spiritual happiness was more important, came before the body. We set up the first, I mean, it was a revolutionary idea, and the bottom line was about freedom of the individual. Mm-hmm. That's pretty radical, and that was a Capricorn Pluto event.
You're right.
I mean, and they weren't perfect because they came out of, you know, the Enlightenment and other things. So, yes, they were human beings. No, they didn't do everything perfectly, but they started this very radical idea.
And built a new structure for life.
That maybe is going towards globalism, a one world where we're not there yet, and I'm not sure how we'll lead, and we're in a terrible mess. So it's interesting that we're going to face it as a country, our own political return.
And the predictions or the theories or visions for 2008 to 2012 are pretty drastic. We do need some drastic overhauls.
Yeah, pruning.
So the beginning of any planet entering a new sign tends to be a little intense for a while until we adjust to it and get to work on what we need to do. So Pluto's first few years in Capricorn is apt to be very demanding, but necessary. Capricorn, the necessities of life.
Yeah. It's not necessarily hard as a release, but Pluto's sort of the bottom line in the sense that can you manifest your dream? I mean, or does your tree bear fruit? It's like, okay, to dream about it, but it's really nice to eat an apple. I mean, and so it's a real bottom line sign of are we going to make changes or not? It's not particularly dreamy in that sense. It's very practical.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree with what she said, but a word that came to me with Capricorn is initiation.
Yeah.
And the people I talk to, my husband keeps saying, what's going on astrologically? When is it going to stop? Well, I said, it's not. It seems like people are feeling pressures, difficulties, and it just seems that maybe this is a time of initiation in that there's a demand on us, that we're required to face situations and to deal with things in the most positive way we can individually. At least I hear that from a lot of people, that they're having to face things that are difficult. But something can be gained from that, depending on how you face it.
Neptune and Uranus are in higher octave signs of spirituality and higher consciousness. So that helps. I think there's an underlying current running through this whole Pluto and Capricorn cycle, or at least the beginning stages of it, that means we are still building on those ideals and belief systems that we worked so hard to incubate. Don't forget what you believe,
right,
even when it gets tough and the property taxes are due.
Do you have any comment about the Mayan prophecy?
I don't know much about it, to tell you the truth. I only know this period astrologically, so I may have to read one of these books over here about 2012. But yes, there's big things aligning astrologically at the same time.
What are those energies?
Well, this is about 2008. I have to read a book like this. Okay. It's very complicated. And it's what leads up to it. What leads up to it is what we're doing this year, 2009, 10, and 11. That's not very long. We've got some work to do. And a lot of it has to do with, well, let's save humanity here. We've got to help each other. We've got to cluster together and support each other. because and understand each other. We can't support each other if we don't even understand each other, can we? If you speak a different language and have a different religion, then how are we going to get along? We got to figure that one out.
Capricorn's also a sign of
the what? The elder.
The elder and maturity and potential
nice.
Wisdom.
You're right.
And it does get better with time. Mm-hmm. So that's a more positive spin. And I read also about what mm-hmm. Pluto touching Capricorn. It's also a sign of the hermit. Mm-hmm. The initiation and being able to go into oneself and to mature, take responsibility for maturity. Okay. Maybe that's how that connects to coming back around mm-hmm. this country.
We have a whole generation of adults now in their 30s who were born with Pluto in Virgo, another earth sign. So as Pluto goes through Capricorn, it's going to trine their Pluto, meaning they will be able to help. They're the ones who are running the computers and the corporations. You know, they know how things work. Who do you call when you got a computer problem? Your daughter, your son, I don't know, somebody who's 30-something. These are the people that are really going to be coming into their power that we can use as a resource if we don't know what to do. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for being a resource.